Hey there, guys. This is Super Ty. I am here with my friend Patrick, and we are going to be talking about some comics today.
Hey, everybody.
So Patrick, what are you drinking over there?
I'm drinking a Blue Moon with a nice bit of orange in it.
Mighty nice. I am drinking a pale ale, and it is quite delicious at this. What time is it? Like 2?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about 2 on a Monday.
Day drinking. Woo!
Yeah, President's Day. Ah, delicious. So, Patrick, let's just get into it. Like, how did you get into comics?
So it's interesting. So I got into comics, like, it's one of those things where, like, growing up, I didn't really read comics, but, like, I was aware of them. You know, I saw, like, the Spider-Man and Batman and X-Men cartoons. But for whatever reason, I never really got into comics. I did have a couple growing up, and interestingly enough, I remember going to the kids' fair in San Antonio when I was, like, 6 or 7 years old, and I got 3 comics. I got an issue of Batman, an issue of Daredevil, and an issue of Dr. Mirage, the first Dr. Mirage from the original Batman run. And I remember the Daredevil one very specifically because it was on the cover, it said Baby Boom.
Oh, is that the one where he's like holding a baby and there's like guns everywhere?
Something like that, yeah. But like I remember the issue, it was really jarring, and of course it probably wasn't good for a 6 or 7 year old because it's like, it was an issue from like the late 80s, so it was kind of coming out of that really grim and gritty period.
Right, yeah. Oh, man.
And it was funny too because I went back and found it at the store, and it starts off with this homeless guy who finds this, he like finds a baby in the dumpster, and it's like he's yeah, you know, 80, like I said, gritty 80s Marvel Daredevil.
And oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and that's like, you know, really gritty and like street level, whatever. At the same time, there's a gang of like bomber guys, they're called like the Bomb Boys, and they're just really cartoony and weird and outlandish. And It's going back and seeing it, it's really jarring just how it goes from like this like really like intense crime drama to like this really silly costume characters.
So I kind of miss the old gritty 80s Marvel, like where, you know, the Punisher would shoot some dude for like selling weed to like a college kid or something.
Right.
Like, not on my streets. I kind of miss that just because of how ridiculous it is. Like, I actually just recently watched a documentary about Canon Films. Do you remember Canon Films?
Yeah, yeah.
They did, like, Death Wish 2 on and stuff like that. And it 80s Marvel reminds me of that. Just, like, really schlocky, ultra-violent, even though they couldn't really be ultra-violent kind of thing.
Sure.
Do you remember the Batman issue? Was anything weird in that one?
So the Batman issue, same thing. Like, I don't remember the specific details, but I remember there was, like, they find a dead body in a dumpster, so, like, there's...
What's with the dumpsters?
Yeah, I don't know, but there's these, like, GCPD cops who have, like, they're standing in an alley, and there's, like an arm and a leg hanging out of a dumpster, and I remember, because, like, I remember when I was little, I'm reading this, I'm like, hey, like, somebody threw away a mannequin or something.
So, apparently, in Marvel and DC, the most dangerous place on Earth is the dumpsters of the alleys in the cities.
Apparently so, yeah.
God, that's so ridiculous.
I mean, it's, I guess it's just a reflection of, like, you know, 70s, 80s, Serpico, New York, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And then the last one is Dr. Mirage, which, of course, is a Valiant title.
Yeah.
And we'll get into Valiant.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Yeah, no, I was going to say.
We'll get into that business in a little while. In case anybody didn't know, Patrick is a huge Valiant fan, and so am I. So we'll get into that in a little bit. It's going to be pretty awesome. So let me ask something I'm asking everybody I'm talking to. Like, what are you liking in comics nowadays?
So I'm liking stuff that's a lot like, just like more bright and fun. Because, like, I know that was like kind of DC's thing for a while, was that they're like kind of dark and gritty, and I feel like Marvel's kind of moving... And some of their titles moving in that direction, but they're also moving away towards the more bright and fun stuff. Like,
right.
Like if you've been reading Mark Waid's Avengers, or really, I mean, anything by Mark Waid, pretty much, is going to be, like, for the most part, it's going to be like very just bright and fun. I mean, I know I've been mentioning it to a lot of people. I recently read Superman Birthright, and that book is just a joy to read. It's so bright and so colorful, and like. Champions, I haven't got a chance to read it yet, but like,
dude,
everything,
Champions is the bomb.
Yeah, everything I've heard about it is great.
It's like, one of the best things I'm reading right now.
Yeah, like Waid's current Avengers. So yeah, so stuff that's just bright and fun and colorful. Also stuff that's not really bogged down by a lot of events. Like I know one of the almost kind of a cliche with fans is event fatigue.
Oh yeah.
But I don't know, like for the longest time, because like I guess I got into comics like for real, like in about 2005. So like, you know, House of M, Civil War, which at the time, and you know, they still are really good and hold up pretty well. But like, when it was just one thing after another. Like, I think it was this year, there were two events. There was, like, Standoff and then Civil War II, and I'm like,
And now there's Monsters Unleashed.
Yeah.
Which actually is kind of fun, except for I read... Never mind. I'm not going to spoil anything. Continue.
Yeah, and it just event after event after event, and it just everything keeps getting bogged down, and it's especially when it's stuff I'm not interested in, like Civil War II. Like, I feel like I've kind of ranted about it at length, that it's just... I didn't care for it. I really didn't care for it.
Well, I mean, you know, it had some things going for it. I think it started really strong, and then I think I brought this up on my last podcast. I'm not 100% sure. It's a while back, but it had the most Deus Ex Machina ending possible. Like, and for those who aren't familiar, it means God in the Machine is just like the writer saying, oh, this is fixed because it's grand outside forces or something like that. And that's exactly, like, on the nose what happened in Civil War II. And I was just like, seriously, guys, is this really it? In the last issue, it was also just like, I don't know, 8 pages that were just splash pages showing, oh, this is what's going to be coming up in the next few years in Marvel. Like, so this whole thing was a trailer? It really bothered me. I was kind of unhappy about it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is... I got into comics in 05, so that's when, like, Brian Bendis and Ed Brubaker and the guys like that were really big. So, like, the first major series I got into were New Avengers and Brubaker's Captain America, which were wonderful.
They were great.
Really great series. But with Bendis especially, like, I feel like I've kind of grown tired of his like, dialogue style. Like, he has a very distinct dialogue style, and it worked for some things. Like, it worked really well for Ultimate Spider-Man. Like, I love Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And, like, Alias is really good. But when everybody's like snarky and talky and talks like they're on Gilmore Girls,
I've never heard Gilmore Girls. That's great.
You know, well,
Bendis Girls.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing too. Like, he's like openly cited. Gilmore Girls is one of his like big inspirations. But when everybody's like just snappy back and forth, it's like nobody talks like that.
No, nobody does. I mean, if anybody did, they'd probably get punched in the mouth. You know, being that sarcastic all the time.
Right. Yeah. But, like, I just remember with Civil War II, I was just, like, I saw a thing where, like, it was just a page from it where it was Captain Marvel, who, I think she was talking to She-Hulk or something, and, like, I'm like, this is basically Civil War II summed up, where it's like, very, very, very talky, very slow, and Captain Marvel being super sad because she's always screwing up. I'm like, I don't care for this just because I super love Captain Marvel.
I know you do.
I think she's awesome. She's my favorite female superhero, and so, I don't know, I feel like she kind of got... the short shrift in it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I will say, and we kind of jumped the gun, I was about to ask you what you not like in comics, but we'll just continue right now.
Yeah.
One thing I did like that came out of Civil War II is the new Hulk series that's about Jennifer Walters. You know, I don't know if you've been reading it, but...
I haven't read that one. I am a big fan of She-Hulk, though, so well, I'll check that out at some point.
It's basically like... The whole premise is, and I'm, you know, there's no spoilers because it's on issue 2 right now. I can't spoil anything. It's basically like knowing that you have a monster living within you and trying to control it. It's very much a, if Dr. Jekyll was actively trying to hide Mr. Hyde, you know, but it's always bubbling right underneath the surface. And I'm like, yeah, that's a really cool idea. Let's go with that because She-Hulk's always been in control.
Yeah.
Except for that, what, 3 pages in Avengers Disassembled.
Oh, but, yeah, that's right.
But that wasn't her fault. Like, this one is, like, her just trying to control herself. And, like, it's looking like she's going to be gray-colored, which is, I think, is an homage to the original Hulk,
right.
You know, of, like... You know, when she's green, she's in control, but maybe when she's gray, she's not. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's a cool idea.
So let's get back really quick to what else are you digging about comics right now? What else do you think is going right?
So like I said, stuff that's just really bright and fun. Like, I like stuff that's a little more offbeat. Mm-hmm. So, like, with Marvel, like, I love Squirrel Girl.
Ryan North's Squirrel Girl has been a little sunny patch of daisies in a very serious... forest, I guess, is the best analogy.
Yeah, no, for sure, yeah, because that's kind of going back to what I was saying, how it's bright, it's colorful, it's very silly, but it's also really clever. Like,
there's great parts in it.
I mean, I remember there was an issue a few issues ago where she I forget who she beat, but she basically beat somebody through the power of, like, logic and problem solving.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and it's a very silly book. Like, I just remember there was one time where I was reading it in the living room while my fiance was watching a show, and like like I said, like pretty much every page there was like a solid laugh out of it. So after a while, she was like, "Patrick, I'm trying to watch my show," and I was like, "I'm sorry, this book is really funny."
Never apologize for laughing. And also, shout out to Megan. Hey, Megan, how's it going? Congrats. So anything else that you're just like really digging right now? Like you're talking a lot about Marvel, which is cool if that's what you mostly read, but I know it's not. But I mean, like anything else that you think anybody else is doing really good too?
I mean, we mentioned Valiant. I read everything Valiant puts out. They're always really solid. One of the things I really like about them is that like it's all an interconnected universe, but like they keep their line very very slim. Like it's very very streamlined. So like they only have a handful of books going, but because of that, everything is really good.
The thing I love about Valiant's events when they do it, the events are 4 issues long usually, and any tie-in is just a one-shot. It's not another story arc for another book that has to be picked up. It's just like, hey, we can just do this. Like, recently, Divinity 3, there's been a lot of one-shots. Like, oh, this is what XO is doing. This is what Shadow Man and Bloodshot's doing. But it's just that one issue.
Yeah.
And that is, in my opinion, the best way to do it. It's just like, okay, this is how this one thing ties in really quick.
Yeah, and it's cool, too, because, like, they're, like, the one shots that they do for their events, like they're pretty much completely optional. Like you don't have to read them, but like it further enriches the event. Like it makes it that much more like add that much more depth and makes it that much more interesting.
It's like adding a really delicious Parmesan Romano mix to a 4-cheese pizza already. There I mean, go. It adds a little, but if you're not having it, it doesn't take anything away.
Sure,
that's the best. Wow, I'm very impressed with my own analogy. Suck it, past tie.
No, that is that is true, and that's also one of the things too that they're really good at is being really accessible.
Yeah.
So like their event last year, 4001, had the first issue had this really amazing recap that was actually illustrated by David Max. It was gorgeous to look at.
That one was really cool.
But yeah, that's one thing I consistently see in interviews with their publishers and editors is that they're saying how like every issue is somebody's first.
Yeah.
And so like they put really good recaps and at the beginning of every issue, so it makes it really easy to get into.
Okay, so now we can really dive into what do you think is going wrong with comics? You already mentioned event fatigue. And actually, pretty much every single person I've done on this podcast, I haven't done them on the podcast. I've interviewed in the podcast.
Amazing.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, see, and that's the fun about doing this is, like, you eventually people will realize how much we've been drinking as the thing has been going on. So, I got here a little early, sorry. I'm already 2 beers in, so. Nice. So, everybody I've interviewed so far has been saying event fatigue is the number one thing that is just bothering them. And sure. I agree wholeheartedly. I remember when I started reading comics, it was just like, you know, story arcs were still happening, but it wasn't across the entire universe that was happening. I mean, sure, the first Secret Wars back in 1985, that was a huge crossover, but only in characters only. There wasn't anything happening in the X-Men book while Secret Wars was going on. And then Secret Wars 2 kind of flubbed it all up.
Sure.
Also, Patrick, I forgot to mention, this is a PG-13 podcast, so that's why I say flubbed.
Okay, I'll watch
the potty mouth.
I swear so much otherwise.
Well, it's also, you know, as the podcast progresses, I kind of don't care anymore. So you can cuss as much as you want.
All right.
But anyways, like event fatigue is the number one that I've come across so far. But what else? What else?
Event fatigue. I'm trying to think. Like I know. Reboots, I'm sure, are also a very common complaint too. And then what's interesting about that though is that, like, I remember when DC announced Rebirth just a few years after doing New 52. It's like, what? They're rebooting again?
I was worried. I was really worried.
Yeah, like I saw that. It's like I saw that, and I was just like, ugh, really? But as it turned out, Rebirth has actually been really, really good.
Well, it wasn't really a reboot, but it was. It just went back to the. Somebody said it perfectly for me. It was reestablishing legacy.
Right.
And I thought that was really great, but it also just, let's not mince words here, Convergence was probably the worst thing I've ever read. It was
awful. I didn't read it myself, but everything, I didn't see a single good thing about
it. Did you read Hickman's Secret Wars?
Yes.
Okay, cool, you read Convergence, that's exactly what it was,
as
good.
That's what I understood, because I love Jonathan Hickman's Secret Wars and everything leading up to it, just because it was so brilliantly done. And from what I understood with Convergence, it was kind of what they were doing with that, where it's like the multiverse is collapsing, except instead of like years of very meticulous storytelling, and
across, it just happened.
Across numerous titles, it was just boom, okay, the multiverse is collapsing, and done.
So, one thing that this is a both I love and hate thing about comics is I'm really loving that diversity is exploring out more. Like,
sure.
You know, there's more Hispanic characters, there's more African-American characters, there's more female characters. But a thing I hate is when they kind of play too much up to a stereotype of it. Mm-hmm. For example, a good thing is the Sam Wilson Captain America. Yeah. I think has been great. I think it's been awesome. It actually hits a lot of social issues that need to be talked about.
For sure.
But then you go to Patsy Walker Hellcat, which is supposed to be this really big feminine book, you know, feminist book. But it's like this badass lady who was married to the son of Satan. And in the first couple issues, she was like, I'm going to go get a temp job. And yeah. I'm like, no. I mean, you're depowering the feminism of it, yeah. I guess. It's just really just like, oh, they just want to have fun and, you know, get a temp job and blah, blah, blah. I've talked about it before on the podcast, and I'm sorry to be a broken record, everybody, but it really bothers me because I really liked Hellcat, and it's just kind of like become cutesy. Now, Squirrel Girl deserves cutesy.
Yeah, because she's one of those characters who's always been cutesy. Like, my first introduction to Squirrel Girl was in Dan Slott's Great Lakes Avengers miniseries from the mid-2000s.
Which is one of the best things I've ever read.
It was so good! Yeah. But that was part of it, was that, like, it was really funny, it was super dark. Like, it was
very dark.
It was, like, pitch black humor. But Squirrel Girl was part of that, and she brought this, like, great bit of levity to it. And that's been kind of a recurring thing with her. Like, I think it was right after Civil War when Speedball became Penance, and he was...
Yep.
He was, like, the epitome of dark and gritty, where he had, like, basically a metal gimp suit with spikes inside that punished him every time he moved.
They did really bring out the gimp.
Yeah.
Like, they brought it out in full force with that.
They really did.
My whole thing was, how did he see out of his mask?
That's true, yeah.
I call shenanigans, and I will continue to call shenanigans until that's answered.
Right.
But, so anything else that you're just not digging right now? That you're just not happy with?
Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely agree on you with the forced diversity, because yeah, it is really
no, that's good.
It is really, really, really great. I mean, like Miss Marvel, like the new Miss Marvel, Kamala Khan. She's
that's
awesome.
A fantastic book.
It is. It's super fun, and she's a great character. She's not a stereotype by any means.
Exactly. It doesn't play up to stereotypes.
Yeah, and like Moon Girl Devil Dinosaur is also a really
God,
good example
I love
of that.
Book. It's
so
cute
fun.
And so fun.
Yeah,
and also who doesn't want to own a dinosaur?
I know,
or at least be friends with one.
Especially one who you can switch bodies with.
Oh, yeah. So, here's something that I am also not kind of liking. Whenever anything big happens, it's always attributed to, oh, they're either an Inhuman now or they're a mutant. Like, that's
yeah.
it. There's no... I miss the science accidents.
Yeah, that's true. Like, that's true. It seems like most of the new characters in the last few years have been like, they've really been pushing the Inhumans, and
but it's feeling too easy now.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's there have been people who have cited that, like, whenever there was a new character, like, in the 80s or 90s, it's like, what's their origin? Oh, they're a mutant. And
yeah.
Now we're kind of getting to that. It's like, oh, except they're an Inhuman.
Yeah, exactly.
So you don't really see it. You don't see, like, any more, like, radioactive spider bites or getting caught in a gamma explosion or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I would rather it be something to the effect of, like... Okay, so here's something that worked out really well. Riri Williams in the new Iron Man thing. She's just really smart, and
right.
she just built her own Iron Man suit. That's cool. I get that.
Yeah.
That makes more sense. It's not more of a luck of a draw, like, oh, they just happen to be an Inhuman. How great is that?
Sure.
I mean, I don't know. It just feels cheap.
Yeah.
It feels easy.
Yeah, like, there's the new character, Mosaic, who like, they've been pushing really hard, but
they've been pushing it really hard.
Yeah, I haven't gotten into that, but, like with Ms. Marvel, it made sense, though, because it was right after Infinity, so there was the big Terrigen Cloud that was going around, and it was activating Inhumans at random. And Kamala's big thing was that she's a fangirl. She's like, she idolized Captain Marvel, and so the whole wish fulfillment thing of, like, a fangirl who becomes a superhero is really cool.
Yeah, that was really cool. But, like, because you brought up a Mosaic, I'm not going to lie. I am not a fan of that series just because it's Marvel's version of Dead Man. You know, he just hops into people's bodies. That's, I'm like, all right. Yeah. Well, that's been done many, many, many years ago.
Sure.
So whatever, that's fine. But one thing that I am not a huge fan of is, and this is going to sound very heretical, I guess is the best way to put it, is we have so much good stuff that is happening,
mm-hmm.
but it feels like that gives people, gives publishers an excuse to just put out whatever.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
It kind of just seems like almost like holding a handful of darts at a dartboard and just throwing all of them and seeing what sticks.
Yeah, and actually,
which one's going to be a bullseye?
Yeah, and that does kind of remind me though, like it, or also that is actually one thing too. Whenever one character takes off and like super takes off, and that becomes like the big thing, and that like everybody or not everybody gets into it, but like they force it, like,
and it becomes like the model of trying to start new stuff also.
Yeah. Yeah, so like, so take for instance, Deadpool. Deadpool is one of the characters that got me into comics in the first place. Like, when I remember when I was in college, one of the first comics I read was like, I had this friend who was into comics, and he introduced me to Deadpool, and I was like, oh, that sounds really cool. It's like he knows he's in a comic book, and it's like really funny and self aware. And I read Deadpool 11, which is Joe Kelly's Deadpool 11. For those who don't know, Deadpool travels back in time, and so what they do is that they took an old issue of Spider-Man and cut it up and put Deadpool in it, and it was brilliant. It's so funny.
I think I've read that one.
Yeah, Joe Kelly's run on Deadpool is amazing anyway, because like, I feel like that's the thing, since Deadpool's become so popular, he's become kind of, in a lot of ways, he's become kind of a one-note character, where it's like, ah, oh, he's funny, and he shoots people, and it's like, ah, LOL, he knows he's in a comic book, but like, when you read like the early stuff like that, like Joe Kelly's run, and then Fabian Nicieza writing Cable and Deadpool, there's actually a lot of depth to the character. Like he uses humor as like a self-defense mechanism. Like he is like really messed up inside, and he acknowledges it. But like,
the only thing I liked in Standoff was when Kobik, the Cosmic Cube girl, if nobody knows what happened in the Standoff, she's trying to figure out why she should be a good guy, and he, because she realizes that she's been manipulated the entire time, he was like, oh, well, look into my mind, and everybody's like, no, 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 no. And at the time, he was in the Uncanny Avengers, and everybody's trying to stop him, and she gets in there, and she goes, oh, he's been so messed up so long, and he's still trying to be a hero. I was like, okay, that's a good plot point.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's trying still.
Yeah.
And I mean, don't get me wrong, I think there's a glut of Deadpool books going on right now, almost too many, and it's, especially when they do a $10 issue, I mean, it's huge, but it's a lot of reprint stuff sometimes,
sure.
And it just kind of bothers me, but anyways, I'm sorry, continue.
But yeah, and that's like the key thing with Deadpool is that he knows he's a bad guy, because he kills people, but he is desperately trying to do good, and the fact that he is trying to do good, like you said, that's like the key, kind of the key plot point. But I feel like a lot of writers and people miss.
Yeah.
And so when you see it, just like, oh, Deadpool, he's funny, haha. It's like, yeah, but there's a lot more to it than that. So like, when I see like 8 Deadpool books on the shelf, I'm just like, there's things I'd rather be reading.
Well, and I mean, everybody has to pick and choose their time.
Sure.
You know, it's just that kind of thing of, hey, I only have so much money.
Exactly.
I mean, working in a comic shop, I want people to buy as much as they, you know, want.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Can.
And I mean, I'm not gonna like judge people for like, it's like oh, you're buying this book. Ugh, no. It's like everybody's entitled to what they like.
Yeah, I don't care what people buy at my shop. If they like what they like, I'm going to encourage that.
Sure.
And this is something that can go back to what I think is good in comics now is it's more accepted. It's no longer the dork thing to do.
Absolutely.
It's like, because I fully believe that comics are literature.
They are, yeah.
Now, are every one of them Pulitzer winners? No. But, I mean, there are some that, like, really hit on some very cool issues.
For sure, yeah.
That need to be discussed, and sometimes a kid can't afford to go see a psychiatrist, so a comic can help them out.
Yeah.
You know, for example, Moon Knight has, like, some really interesting ideas about mental health issues.
Absolutely.
I mean, of course, there's moon gods and, you know, Egyptian pantheons trying to take over New York, but the central core of the character is he's trying to get his head on straight. And sometimes you can't do that by yourself, and people need to realize that. You can't always fix your problems yourself.
Yeah. Moon Knight is very, very good. For those who aren't reading it, I highly recommend
it. Oh, Jeff Lemire can do whatever he wants, and I'll read it.
He's a great writer.
And here's another question. Do you follow publishers, do you follow characters, or do you follow writers, or do you follow artists? And it can be a combination, that's
fine. Yeah, it's kind of a combination. So I mostly read Marvel. Although, like I said, I read everything Valiant puts out.
Right.
I read the occasional Image, Boom, Dark Horse title, and then a little bit of DC here and there. Like, with DC, DC is one of those where, for the longest time, like, I didn't really get into them just because they seem like, they're kind of hard to get into just because they're so big. But, like, that is one of the upsides of, like, pretty regular reboots or renumberings, is that it does make it accessible. Like New 52 Batman was awesome. Scott Snyder's Batman
was great.
It was really, really good. And yeah, it was very accessible. It's great for new readers. Like I'd been playing Batman Arkham Asylum and Arkham City, and it's also good too because the characterization of Batman's kind of similar to that, so it makes it really accessible. I follow publishers. If there's like a writer I really like, I'll definitely check something out, even if I'm not really familiar with the character. So, like, for example, Fred Van Lente is one of my favorite writers. I really like his stuff.
Which of his things is your favorite?
Probably Archer and Armstrong.
Right.
Yeah, Archer and Armstrong. He also co-wrote Incredible Hercules with Greg Pak at Marvel, which was also a really
that
good
was
series.
A really fun series. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I actually just read Planet Hulk again for the first time.
Oh, fair.
Read it again for the first time in a while.
Yeah.
It's been like a decade since I read it. I was like, wow, this was really good.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Greg Pak brought me to that idea.
Sure.
Continue.
But yeah, but like with Fred Van Lente, for example, he did this creator-owned series with Dark Horse recently called Weird Detective.
Oh, that was one of the best things.
Weird Detective was awesome. I'm
glad you liked it, because it's a disturbing book.
It's very disturbing.
Okay, so if nobody knows what Weird Detective is, and you should read it because it is amazing, it's basically this Lovecraftian tale about a being, I guess is the best way to put it, from the lost city of Ralia, and it switches minds with an Earth detective, and the Earth detective cannot understand the city of Ralia, and that was one of the funniest, like, one-panel things I've ever read, where he's like, I don't know where I am, help me. I mean, he's this multi-eyed monster with claw hands, and he's just like, I don't know what's going on! And then the monster in the detective's body is just trying to, you know, like, do his job, and argues with a cat.
Yeah.
And it was actually, like, it was genuinely funny, genuinely creepy at points. And it really brought in an old idea like Lovecraftian mythos into a modern setting. So yeah. that's what that is. Fred Valente wrote it. Continue, Patrick. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So like Ty mentioned, Weird Detective. Like, I like to describe to people as a Lovecraftian crime noir horror comedy.
Yeah, that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, because it is a very, very funny book, and that's one of the things I really like about Fred Valente is like he'll do these really just absolutely bizarre things. And yeah, one of the big things in Weird Detective, as Ty mentioned, is that like it is that because this interdimensional creature takes over this this NYPD detective's body, like he has all these new senses, so he can like face through walls, and he can like see like
reverse sonar and stuff like that.
Yeah, and one of the ones that's really funny is that he can communicate with animals, and
yeah.
So the detective has a cat. And the cat will stare at him. And as it turns out, when your animals are staring at you, it means that they're trying to like psychically communicate with you.
Right.
And so like the cat will stare at them, and they'll have these big psychic conversations just back and forth, just staring at each other. But it's really funny because the cat, his cat is kind of a huge jerk.
Cat's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
But you really haven't answer my question. Do you, and I'm not trying to badger you, but do you follow publishers, characters, writers, or artists?
I think it would be publishers, then writers, then characters.
Okay.
Yeah.
For me, I'll follow a writer anywhere.
Sure.
I'll any new thing Jeff Lemire writes, I'll give it a shot. I mean, do they all stick? No, but
sure.
Most of them are always good. Or I'll follow, artist, like, if I see Tua Lotte doing anything, I'll pick it up.
Her stuff is gorgeous.
I'll pick it up no matter what. Or Sean Murphy, you know, the scratchy artist that did Tokyo Ghost.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, anything he does, I will pick it up to give it a shot.
Yeah.
I've kind of recently gotten to the art part of comic books.
Yeah?
I've always been a story first guy, and the art comes second. But now I've really been, like, delving into it, and yeah, that's really sad for reading comics for, you know, 24 years and now I'm getting into the art part of comic books,
right?
I had a question, I totally forgot what it was. I don't know, this actually seems like a good place to stop. I'll try and think of my question, we'll refill our beers, and then we'll just be back in a couple of seconds, but to you it will feel like almost nothing. So, 1 second here, and stop. Hey, everybody, we're back for our round two.
Hey.
So, hey. So, I want to start off with, what are your favorite titles that are going on right now? I'll give you five.
Five? Okay. So, it's basically wrapping up, but one of my favorite titles is Bloodshot Reborn from Valiant.
Well, it's going to be starting again soon.
Yeah. So. Yeah, but so... So when I first got into Valiant, I was reading the original Bloodshot and Archer and Armstrong, mm-hmm. and Exo Manowar. Bloodshot really stood out to me just because, like, it's a really cool idea where it's like this nano powered soldier who's basically kind of a combination of Wolverine and the Punisher, where he can regenerate really quickly and he's basically unkillable. He's this like pissed off super soldier with no memory.
Mm-hmm.
But then they really go in depth with it, where like. How, and especially when it relaunches Bloodshot Reborn, where he's trying to reclaim his humanity, and prove that he isn't just this white skinned red eyed monster.
Right. One thing I love about Bloodshot Reborn is it takes chances.
It does.
I mean, the Analog Man story, where it's for those who haven't read the Analog Man story, it's basically Mad Max meets the Valiant Universe,
yeah,
and it
also
was one of the best things. Like, I fanboyed out. I'm not going to lie. I really went for it. I thought it was so cool.
Yeah, and that's exactly how I would sell out the story, saying, it's like did you like Mad Max Fury Road? Of course you did. You'll like this.
Then you'll like this.
Yeah, and yeah, it was really good. And that's also the thing about Bloodshot Reborn as well, is that it's a very smart book.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just, like, brainless shoot-em-up action. Like, there's actually a lot of depth to it.
There's pathos.
Yeah, yeah. Like the first couple story arcs is him, like, dealing with the fallout of like all of this like horrible killing and everything that he did while he was like under control of this paramilitary corporation, and
right.
So he's trying to escape from that, but then he realizes that he still has to be Bloodshot.
All right, so we got Bloodshot Reborn. What's the next one?
Bloodshot Reborn, Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel.
Yeah. So Killer Suit of Comics run on Captain Marvel is great, just because it really established the character. Like, I've always been since I've gotten into comics, I've always been a big fan of Carol Danvers. Like, I really liked Brian Reed's Miss Marvel run from the mid 2000s. I thought that was a lot of fun, but I especially liked Killer Suit of Comics run because it brought her to the forefront. It made her like she was Earth's Mightiest Hero.
It made her integral to the Marvel fabric.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she wasn't, because prior to that, I mean, she was just kind of.
She was around.
Yeah, she was around. She was just kind of like a B or C list Avengers character, or kind of like with the X-Men sometimes. But like Captain Marvel, when she became Captain Marvel, it really brought her to the forefront.
So, really quick question: you at the very beginning you brought up House of M. The whole point of House of M was Scarlet Witch was trying to give every hero their dream to make sure that the world would work.
Yeah.
You know, like Captain America never got frozen and he grew into an old man. That was like his hidden dream.
Sure.
Wolverine's was to be Nick Fury, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But Miss Marvel's was to be the world's most popular superhero.
Yeah.
Now, do you ever think somebody is ever going to hit that back later in a series of some sort? Just like what she really wants is to be accepted as this great.
Well, that's it. That kind of seems to be what they've been building up towards. Because yeah, because like I was, I forget who I was talking about that with the other day. I think I'm up. But yeah, like in House of M, she was Captain Marvel. She was the world's most greatest, most popular superhero.
Right.
And they've been building up to that. Like Kelly Sue DeConnick's run, it was great from a character standpoint. Like it was a lot of fun from a story point. But like it wasn't like I guess like a character defining story run.
Yeah.
But with this the this current run that just started really seems to be doing that. I mean, like, the cover of the first issue is her, like, floating overhead, and everybody's
really happy to see her.
Yeah, it's this big crowd, and they're all like cheering her, and they have like signs like, yeah, Cap. So I think that'll be kind of, this will be like the run that really builds her up, especially with the movie coming out in a couple of years. Like, they really want
to be. I'm stoked about it. And Brie Larson just liked one of your tweets, which, good for you, man.
Yeah, that was really cool. So I'm an artist, and so I do screen printing. And one of the things I did recently was a Captain Marvel bandana. And
right.
So I took a picture of our dog wearing a Captain Marvel bandana and posted it. Kelly Sue DeConnick retweeted it, and Brie Larson liked it. So I was like, hey!
Yeah, there you go.
Cool.
Isn't that a good feeling?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so far we got Bloodshot Reborn, and we got, or Bloodshot, I guess, period, right?
Yeah.
Captain Marvel, you got three more.
Okay. Also, back, like as I mentioned before, Fred Van Lente, and also the new A&A by Rafer Roberts, Archer and Armstrong.
Right.
I'm a huge fan of buddy action comedies. I love buddy action comedies.
48 Hours, Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
Die Hard 3.
Die Hard 3. I recently watched Shane Black's The Nice Guys.
That's a great movie.
Great.
So, really quick, we're just going to digress from half a second from comics to talk about this movie. So, the entire time I'm watching it, I'm like, it's not a Shane Black movie. Christmas isn't happening. There's no Christmas.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, there's no plot spoilers here at all, but in the very last, like, 5 minutes, you find out, oh, yeah, it's Christmas time. And I was just like, ah, Shane Black, you got me.
No, like, so, I was actually thinking that exact thing. Like, and, like, at the very, very end, like, it shows him, and, like, it just happens to be Christmas time.
So, he's directing the next Punisher, or, I'm sorry, Predator movie.
Oh, awesome.
So, how's Christmas going to be affected in this? That's what I'm really wondering, because if it's, here's a little dream, if I can dream a little dream, I think a really great movie would be The Predator Lands at the North Pole. And Santa and the elves have to fight the Predator.
That sounds amazing.
But then we can get other Christmas characters in, like Frosty Snowman, Jack Frost, all this stuff. And, you know, well, I'm also dreaming flamethrowers.
Of course.
So, anyways, I'm sorry, I had to digress from that. So you like Archer and Armstrong. You know, on your recommendation, I read the first series of Archer and Armstrong. I haven't gotten to A+A.
Yeah.
Just because I haven't had time yet. But, it was solid. I honestly did not think I would like it. I loved it. I thought it was really fun.
Yeah.
And it was, and that's, going back to our very first subject, one thing that I really love in comics is now they're getting fun again. You brought that up earlier, but I want a good time. I never intentionally watch a movie or read a book that it bums me out. I mean,
sure.
I'm just not that guy. I have enough problems in the real world. I don't need to watch Schindler's List every week, you know.
Right.
It's a bummer. And that's why I like Archer and Armstrong, was just like, parts of it were genuinely funny.
Well, that's what I really loved about it. Yeah, like it's funny. And I also like, especially in Fred Van Lente's run, it has a really fun sense of adventure to it. Like, I love adventure. Like Indiana Jones, Pirates of the Caribbean. It's like
the first Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, just the first, and the rest.
Okay, cool.
The rest of them.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I'm not ashamed to admit, I love the first Pirates of the Caribbean.
No, me too.
Movie.
I love that movie.
I thought it was
a
really great
movie.
It's
so much fun. But yeah, so Archer and Armstrong, it's funny, it has a great sense of adventure, and one of the things I love too that they've been doing, Armstrong is one of three immortal brothers in the Valiant Universe.
Right, it's him, Eternal Warrior, and
Ivar Time Walker.
Ivar the Time Walker.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But yeah,
the Doctor Who of the Valiant Universe.
That's exactly what Ivar is Doctor Who. But yeah, so they're thousands of years old, and what's really cool is that they actually like weave them into history. Like there's an issue of Archer and Armstrong where it's the myth of Gilgamesh, except instead of Gilgamesh like going and having this grand adventure, it's actually the three immortal brothers.
Oh, okay.
And there's an upcoming one shot they're doing where it's the Arthurian legend of the Green Knight.
Yeah.
Except it's with the three immortal brothers.
So I hear that A+A is ending.
Yeah, so the last issue was issue 12, which I think came out last week or the week before.
Well, crap. Okay, it's ended.
Yeah.
And so are, do you You got the inside track. Is anything happening with that later, or?
So, I don't know if they're going to be doing... I'm sure they'll be doing another Archer and Armstrong series before too long, because that's one of the things
that's one of the core books.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one of the things they do, is that whenever a series has run its course, rather than just, like, letting it run and run and run, they'll end it and let people kind of start to miss the characters again.
Right.
And then do that. They actually did it with Archer and Armstrong before, because there was the first series, and then it ended, and then,
right.
And then there's about a year or so, and then it relaunched as A&A.
Yeah, so I'm sure they're going to... I mean, they're relaunching Bloodshot Reborn, so they'd have to do another one of those.
Yeah, and like they've kind of done that. There's Harbinger, which ended, and then it kind of continued as Imperium, which followed some different characters, and then they started
which
again.
Which I read also on your recommendation, and it was really great.
Yeah.
What was the assassin bot's name in that book?
Oh, so one of my favorite characters in Imperium is he's basically this self-aware killbot named Mech Major. But
it was called, what was its actual name?
So because he was self-aware, he named himself Sunlight on Snow.
Yes.
And the reason why is because he's very introspective. And so he thought he had this vision of this peaceful snowy mountainside, and it was obviously illuminated by the sunlight, and he was thinking that it was equally beautiful and sad, because it's this beautiful sight, but because of the sunlight, it's melting the snow.
Right.
Which
I thought was, when I read that on your recommendation, that was really profound for me.
For
I was
sure.
Like, wow, this robot that is a killbot in the Valiant universe said one of the most beautiful things I've read in print in 5 years. I was just like, oh my god, that is such a genius thing.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, continue.
Okay, so Bloodshot, Captain Marvel, Archer and Armstrong.
Got two more.
Power Man and Iron Fist has been amazing.
It has been really fun. It's a buddy book.
Yeah,
just like you were saying.
Going back to what I was saying, yeah, like buddy action comedies. And Power Man and Iron Fist are such a great pair, because especially the way they're characterized now. Luke Cage, he's basically the straight man family guy. He has a wife and kid to worry about, so he's kind of settled down. He's a little more mature. Danny Rand, on the other hand, he's still kind of like the goofy, carefree billionaire. So he's I think it was in the first couple of issues, it's basically Danny being like, yeah, we're getting the band back together, and people are being like, you guys are back together, and it looks like we're not back together, and they totally are.
So, I've been reading that book, religiously, mostly because it reminds me of the old school Power Man and Iron Fist book.
Yeah.
Like, it was them being buddies and taking care of stuff. But this one really got me because of two things. The first one is Luke Cage no longer cusses because he has a daughter. And instead of the F word, he says fiddle faddle, which I've actually started using at the shop. I start saying fiddle faddle. Like, what the fiddle faddle is happening in this back room?
It's so great because he says that a few times, and then Danny's like, Luke, what's the deal with fiddle faddle? And they do a lot of cutaway gags in that series.
Yeah.
And so it cuts to the scene of Luke, Jessica, and baby Danny. And then you see her, crawling across the floor, just cussing up a storm, and Jessica's like, Luke, you really got to curb the swearing.
Yeah. And then the Power Fist Mobile.
Oh, yeah.
So they have one of the old Fantastic cars, and Iron Fist renames it the Power Fist Mobile. And he doesn't quite understand why that might not be the best name for something. So I'll just leave it at that. Okay, so we got those four. You got one more. What's next?
Okay,
it's not going to be on your tombstone, just top of your head, the thing that you're liking really a lot right now.
What am I liking a lot right now?
That's cool if you don't know.
Yeah, so I was going to say, going back to that Valiant Well one more time, Ninjak is really good.
So I read the first volume so far, I haven't gotten to catch up yet.
Yeah, so kind of the boiled down to his very base parts, Ninjak is basically James Bond mashed up with Batman.
I was saying James Bond with Batman, and every once in a while, some fun craziness as well.
Yeah.
Almost some absurdity to the level of, Monty Python level.
Almost, yeah.
It's almost there. And I would love one issue where it's just a comedy issue, where it's just almost that British. But I mean,
well, yeah, and that is the thing too, is that like Ninjak is like he is British, like he's an MI6 agent, he's like British aristocracy. He has a very, very dry, very British sense of humor.
Right, exactly.
And one of the things that's been interesting that they've been kind of building up is him dealing with a lot of magical and, like...
Dude, Shadow Man's coming back.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
stoked.
Yeah, like...
That's what got me into the Valiant universe.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, like, there was a story arc recently called Operation Deadside where Ninjak goes to the Deadside, which is basically the land of the dead.
Right.
And like, Shadow Man's there, and he's being forced to do evil against his will. But that's one of the really fun things about Ninjak is how like he's this like spy who's used to working with like tech and like tangible stuff, and he's like, I hate magic.
So the thing that really surprised me that I never even thought about, it was such a like out of left field for me thing, was there's other ninjas. There's yeah. Ninja L, there's Ninja B, and he's Ninja K, but everybody just calls him Ninjak.
Yep.
So when I was reading that, it was like, oh, they got Ninja L. I was like, oh, Ninja L. And
Ninja L or Ninjab.
Yeah, Ninjab. Or Ninja, you know, with the extra A to the end. But so that one I really did enjoy. It's just, I got to catch up, man. I'm, you know, how much I read.
There's so much stuff out. There's so much good stuff out there. That's the thing.
It's like, a glut. I mean, that's the word I'm using. It's like almost gluttonous how much that we have.
Yeah.
For, you know, options, and it's sometimes a little infuriating because I just don't have enough time. I was like, I really want to read this, but I'll get to it in like 6 months, I guess.
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I completely get that.
I have a list at home that's like 4 pages long, single space, of, okay, I got to read this next. I got to read this next. I got to read this next. Okay, so we got to your favorite titles. I want you to give me 3 writers that you are... Into the Earth, I will give a shot anything they pick up. So go for it.
So first and foremost is Dan Slott. Dan Slott is probably my all-time favorite writer. Like he's currently on Amazing Spider-Man. I first got into him when he was on She-Hulk in the mid-2000s. He also did a really, really good, highly underrated Thing series.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. It was really cool. It was called kind of the basis of it was that. The thing is friends with everybody.
Yeah.
And so it's him like teaming up with all these like really just random characters, and like everybody likes him because he's the ever loving blue eyed thing. And so he's just this kind of working class Joe, and yeah. And so it was a really, really fun series. But what I really like about Dan Slott's writing is that he works really, really well with continuity. Like he's obviously a huge Marvel fan himself.
He pays attention to continuity, which a lot of writers don't anymore.
Yeah.
Which I'm happy that Dan Slott does it.
Yeah, he does that, and he doesn't do it where it's like almost like oh, an issue like 136 of
he's not series. Grant Morrison of like, hey, this issue right here, this is what I'm going to pull things from and make a huge story out of it.
Yeah, he weaves really obscure continuity points in like very, very seamlessly, and like, you know, he has a really sense of fun. Like I absolutely loved his run on Spider-Man for the last god like 5 or 6 years now.
Oh, it's been going on for a while. It's been more than 5 or 6.
Yeah,
has it been a decade?
Almost. Like I know because I remember there was, I think it was Big Time was the big relaunch post One More Day where it was,
oh god,
yeah, that was a. One more day was hot garbage, but everything that came after
it was hot garbage.
One More Day was hot garbage. My name is Patrick Kane.
The art was cool, I guess.
I am on record saying that. One more day was terrible, but everything that came after it was really has been really, really.
It good. Has been really good,
and yeah, like they had, because they had the Spider-Man Brain Trust, where it was like a rotating team of writers, where it was like Dan Slott, I think Mark Guggenheim,
Mark Waid was in it, I think also.
I think so, yeah. But there was a lot of like really big name writers, and then
Bendis in on it? I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think he was
mostly working on Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah,
he did
Ultimate Spider-Man and then the Miles Morales Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
But Dan Slott, one of my probably my all time favorite writers. Dan Slott.
Who's next?
So after that, as I mentioned before, Fred Van Lente.
Fred Van Lente.
Yeah, Fred Van Lente is great. Like he does like really weird and wacky things, but he makes it work and work really well. So he's really good. And then I'll think about this for a sec.
That's all right. I mean, think away. We have been drinking. Although you haven't taken a sip of your drink in a while. I mean, it's not that I'm paying attention or nothing. I'm lapping you. Which is always a horrible sign.
Drinky, drinky, drinky.
Is there any new writers you're really digging?
Robbie Thompson has been really good. So Robbie Thompson writes, he writes Silk. So, Silk I've also been really enjoying. So I'm a really big Spider-Man fan, and Silk is I feel is a really interesting twist on kind of the Spider-Man mythos, where it's Cindy Moon. She was bitten by the same spider as Peter Parker, so she got spider powers, but she was hidden away in this hidden bunker.
This bunker to hide from Morlun, right?
Yeah, Morlun and the Inheritors, which all came to light in Spider-Verse, which was also a lot of fun.
I'm not going to lie, man. I am not a Spider-Man fan.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just never was. I got in through X-Men.
Sure.
And I read Spider-Verse, and I was a five-year-old kid the entire time I was reading. I was like, oh, my God. They brought in Spider-Ham, Spider-Man 2099. They brought in the Japanese Spider-Man from the live-action TV show. And he had his giant robot.
The giant robot.
I was just like, every single thing about this is what makes comics good.
Spider-Verse was awesome. It was. It was so much fun. It took itself just seriously enough to be solid, but like it was still having a lot of fun with itself.
Right, exactly. Like especially when they bring in like manga Spider-Man, and he was black and white.
Yeah.
And like proportional like that, like the manga style.
One of my favorite bits was there was one of the Spider-Verse one shots where it was just like little short stories of the different Spider-Men. They had the Daily newspaper.
Oh yeah, I read that Spider-Man. One. It was very funny.
And it was so great because like if you've ever read the Daily Newspaper ship Spider-Man, not a lot happens.
No.
And they basically spend half the time recapping what happened the previous day. so like the Inheritor shows up to kill the Spider-Man of that universe, and he basically just they keep us repeating the same thing over and over again. So he just gets frustrated and leaves.
One of my favorite / most horrifying moments of that Spider-Verse was they go to the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends cartoon universe.
Oh, yeah.
And they straight up kill Iceman and Firestar and then just like eat that Spider-Man's face off. And I was just like, oh my God, dude, calm it down. Like, it was. Yeah, it's comic books, but man, that was such a destruction of innocence in front of me, because
sure.
I used to watch that when I was little.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh my God, no! Iceman! He's all broken to pieces, and Firestar has this huge, like, piece of wall stuck through her. I was like, jeez. But anyways, so, yeah, I don't know how we got to Spider-Verse. I'm sorry.
One more writer I also really, really like and become a huge fan of in the last few years is Jonathan Hickman. Like I think his main thing right now is the Black Monday murders, but like I loved his Avengers and New Avengers run. Is Avengers, New Avengers, S.H.I.E.L.D. and Secret Warriors, and then if he finished
S.H.I.E.L.D., that'd be great.
Yeah,
wouldn't it?
God, that's been a while. But
it's not like I'm asking for a unicorn or anything.
But yeah, what I love about Hickman though, and also like his creator and stuff. Like I love Manhattan Project, which
that was a great book.
Is so weird and dark and weird. And if you're a fan of Rick and Morty, you will like Manhattan Project. But
oh wow, I never thought of that.
Yeah,
like, for reals, that's...
Yeah, it's like just insane dark, but also, like, kind of funny super science.
It's a way darker Rick and Morty. Oh, my God. You just hit it on the head. That's how I'm going to start selling it now.
But yeah, like, what I love about Hickman, though, is that, like, his stuff, he does characterization really well, and then he also, like, he's very, very meticulous about, like, putting in plot points, and they always pay off.
Yeah, every time I read a Hickman book, except for the ones that, like, just don't go anywhere, like... Dying in the Dead, Hickman, is, you know, he knows the ending to the story before he even types down the first page.
Yeah.
Like, I know that East West has a solid ending. It's not him just befuddling along until he gets to the last story arc.
Sure.
He knows how it's going to end.
Yeah.
And just like with all of his Marvel work, because, damn, like, I remember reading an issue of his FF run. And it was, there was this one page, and I was like, oh, this is how Secret Wars starts. And then 8 years later, he finishes Secret Wars.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh my God, he really thought it through the entire time.
Yeah, like it's like, because that was the thing. Like, I got into his Avengers, and like that was like, I remember it was a big thing. They were pushing it really hard, and like the big thing, like his the big recurring theme with the Avengers was we're gonna be bigger. Like it was Avengers and Avengers World and like Avengers Universe, and it just grew and grew. And then like when Secret Wars hit, I was so excited for Secret Wars, and it paid off so well. Like, I loved
Secret Wars. Sure, it took a while.
It did,
but
yeah.
He can also make fun of himself, and that's one thing I really like. Like, in the Secret Wars 2, T-O-O.
Oh, yeah. That was a lot of fun.
Where he's talking to Dr. Doom, he's like, I don't have an ending. I don't know how to end this. And, like, Doom is like, you're writing Doom. You will finish this.
Yeah,
I thought that was really great.
Yeah.
What was the other thing we were going to talk about? We talked writers, we talked titles, story arcs.
Yeah.
So, give me your top three, like, most life-changing comic books, the ones that you will reread over and over again, no matter how many times.
So, when we were talking about this earlier with, like, favorite story arcs, my all-time favorite comic is Preacher. I love Preacher.
I read it once a year.
So Preacher, what I love about Preacher is that, like, I feel like it's summed up really, really well with the it's in volume 2, the story arc until the end of the world, where it's the flashback to when Jesse Custer is a kid, and it's the night before he and Ina's family are going to try to escape from Angelville. And his dad says, you have to be one of the good guys because there's way too many bad.
Yeah.
I love that line so much.
Well, and it's also a true statement.
You got
to be a good guy.
Yeah, it's so good. And what I love about Preacher is that, like, I'm also a really big fan of, like, mashing up genres. And Preacher is basically a road trip horror comedy western.
I always put it as a buddy comedy road trip western with trauma films involved.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Because, man, it gets really gory.
There's some messed up stuff in that book. Like, it is not for kids in the slightest.
So, the thing that gets me about Preacher, I mean, yes, it's an amazing story. I mean, Steve Dillon, you know, may he rest in peace.
Oh, yeah.
He was the best artist to depict facial expression.
Yeah.
Like, you remember that one part where Star is trying on all the hats?
I was just thinking about that.
I mean, every single time you look at one of those panels, you're just like, man, I have never seen contempt drawn before until I've seen this. But my main thing is, to me, yeah, it's about Jesse, but it's also equally about Cassidy.
Yeah.
Because Cassidy is... Okay, this is when we stop being PG-13. He's a piece of shit.
Yeah, he is. Absolutely.
Like, he's a horrible person.
That's one of, like, the... Also, you know, 20-year-old spoilers.
Yeah.
Preacher, yeah, and one of the big reveals on Preacher is that Cassidy is that, like, he's this 100-plus-year-old vampire, and he's actually a terrible person.
He's a horrible person, and he's... It's really about his redemption.
Yeah.
Like, that last story arc, when he shows up and they have that fight.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you've had friends like this, but I've definitely had friends like this where we had to hash it out that way. And at the end of it, we're like, okay, now we can start over.
Yeah.
And we also realize how much of friends we really are.
Sure.
And this little giant thing in our relationship isn't going to affect the entirety of it.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that really hit with me with Preacher is, like, it's really kind of about Cassidy not being such a dick all the time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and that is true, because I think it was on Comics Alliance, they had an article about that where they were saying how, like, the real villain of Preacher is Cassidy, and...
He was,
because, like, he's, like, just this massive betrayal, because, like, you're reading him for a good couple of dozen issues, where he's just an affable Irish guy who happens to be a vampire, but he's a good guy otherwise.
I always try to be, like, Cassidy in the first story arc and a half.
Yeah.
I'm always trying to be that guy that's just like, yeah, cool, whatever, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to be like Cassidy after that.
Yeah, Cassidy where he's like,
I'm going to steal your girl.
I'm going to steal your girl and pump her full of drugs.
Yeah, and I'm also a bastard person.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got Preacher. What else?
Okay, Preacher, Ed Brubaker's Captain America.
Yeah, it was really good. It was really good.
Yeah, like, as I mentioned, when I started reading comics, like, seriously, that was one of the first things I picked up was the Winter Soldier. Like, specifically, I think the first issue of Cap I picked up was Winter Soldier number 8, or Captain America number 8.
Yeah.
Where it's the one where Cat, Hydra blows up part of Philadelphia.
Oh yeah.
And Cap is like running into the fire trying to save people, and he sees Bucky, or he sees the Winter Soldier, and he goes, and he's like, Bucky.
And who's Bucky?
Who the hell is Bucky?
And they did it really well in the movie too.
Yes, that's the thing too. I mean, that's one of the reasons why the Winter Soldier in the movie is so good. Is like little details like that, but they had the fact they included that. I love that.
I think that was the Marvel Cinematic Universe's first like A+ masterpiece, the Winter Soldier.
Oh yeah,
I mean, Lord knows I love the Avengers and most of the Iron Man movies.
Two are so great.
I even love Edward Norton, Incredible Hulk. Yeah. I love all of those, but that one really put it in place. But the reason why I love Brubaker's run on Captain America was it turned Captain America from this silly superhero that fights villains like Doughboy and MODOK. Because let's be honest, MODOK is not the most terrifying villain.
MODOK is inherently silly. I mean, there's a reason
why he's a giant head with legs sticking out of his chin.
Yeah, there's a reason why in that one run on Secret Avengers why he was basically played for laughs almost entirely.
Exactly, but this turned it into a Jason Bourne level espionage book. It was really a spy book that just happened to have Captain America in it.
Yeah, it was. Really smart. It was. I mean, this is kind of going against what I was saying about it being really dark. But like, it was dark. But it was a really like smart like political thriller.
Yeah, it was great. And I mean, the entire time that I was watching the Winter Soldier movie, I was waiting for, is it Karpov, the guy that is possessed by the Red Skull?
Oh yeah, yeah. Vasily Karpov. He's like a former like KGB spy.
Yeah,
or something.
I was waiting the entire time just to be like, oh, maybe that's who Robert Redford is playing or something. But it just wasn't. But
yeah, still
I'm fine. I'm having a good time.
Yeah, it was great.
Okay, so we got those two. What's the last?
All right. So Preacher, Brubaker's Captain America. I mean, off the top of my head, I think I would say Spider-Verse, just because Spider-Verse, like, it was
a great time.
It was so much fun. It weaved in so many just like great like old obscure and old school Spider-Man references. I mean, like Ty mentioned, it brought in the Japanese Spider-Man who only spoke Japanese. So, like, that was actually like,
there was other ones that only spoke Japanese too. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but they're talking to each other like we have no idea what they're saying.
Yeah.
And then it pulls back and they're like, the ones that only speak English is like, what are they talking about? And I thought that was so funny.
And there was another part too where it's two random Spider-Men and they say something about how I just saw the guy from Seabiscuit. Oh, I just saw the guy from The Social Network.
Yeah, exactly.
And
that
it
was
just,
so
it's,
great.
It was very clever and very, very self-aware.
Yeah, and self-aware can go too far sometimes,
yeah.
But that was the right mix. It was just perfect right there.
Although that does remind me, and this is just kind of a bonus one. Next Wave, Warren Ellis's Next Wave, which is just,
oh, I read that,
thoroughly bizarre.
Once again, I read that once a year.
Thoroughly bizarre, just absolutely insane, but it's so brilliant.
Because
it's so funny
because it's Warren Ellis getting to have fun. He's usually a very serious writer,
yeah.
And this is him just like, no. Carnivorous koala bears, pterodactyl men that don't know how to fly in their suits. What else? Broccoli men. It explains why giant monsters eat people.
Because they're tasty and are like potato chips or something like that.
If I can remember it 100%, let me think. Humans are. It starts off. Why do giant monsters eat people? Humans are warm and pliant. Their bones have a brittle quality. They retain the flavors of the foods that they eat. And they're made of 90% water. Or not 90, but are mostly made of water. So thirst-quenching, well-seasoned, crunchy yet chewy. Humans are the Elvis of snack food.
The Elvis of snack food. Yeah. I remember that, yeah.
I hope I... Man, if I got that 100% right, I'm going to be so happy.
And it was also drawn by Stuart Immonen.
Stuart Immonen, who I love.
I love Stuart Immonen's art, but like in Next Wave especially, his art is so cartoony. I mean, I remember one of the parts I always.
It looks like I was reading a cartoon.
Yeah, and like one of my favorite parts in it, I think it's in the second issue, where there's this like horrible corrupt police officer, and he gets it.
It's the second story arc, but okay. Yes.
Yeah, and he gets it infected with this. I think it's called like this samurai seed, where he turns into this giant Gundam robot.
Yeah.
And then the first thing he does, like he's this giant robot towering over the city, and he goes, "I am the law. Give me your wallets." And of course, one of my other favorite lines too is a machine man who's just constantly drunk and belligerent. So he
reprograms himself to be able to get drunk. So he's constantly drinking.
So he gets eaten by Fin Fang Foom and like blades his way out. And he goes, my favorite line: my robot brain needs beer.
Yeah.
Also, I want to die.
I think in one of my bands I'm going to have to write a song called My Robot Brain Needs Beer. Okay, so this seems like a perfect time to stop, and we'll be right back for round three. I'm really glad that you brought up Next Wave, because that's so one of my great all-time favorites. Okay, we'll be right back. Hey guys, we're back for round three. Patrick, I'm very happy that you decided to hang out with me. I've always wanted to drink with you.
Yeah, for sure, me too.
Now we get to, I don't know what beer you're on, but I think I'm on number five?
Yeah, I think this is going to be number three, and it's a Fireman's Four. Figured I'd finish out with something nice and light.
I love me some Fireman's Four. So, the main reason that everybody gets into comics, at least for me, is you find a character that you like and you stick with it. For me, when I was in 7-Eleven in Odessa, Texas, I saw an issue of Uncanny X-Men 284, and the cover of it looked like a giant Predator mask.
Oh, cool.
But blended into it was a lot of the X-Men, and I saw the silver guy, and I was like, oh my god, who is that? And it turned out to be Colossus, which is, you know, one of my favorite superheroes of all time. I even have a Colossus tattoo on my right arm.
Oh, yeah.
So, which isn't finished yet because I have no money. So let's talk about your favorite characters. I'm going to give you five because this should be easy. This should be like off the top of your head. Here we go. Top five characters. Okay. One, two, three, go.
All right. So, number one, easily, first pick, Captain America.
Captain America.
I love Captain America. Just because, like with Captain America, he represents the very best of us. Like, he represents the American ideal of, like, sticking up for the little guy.
Right.
And, like, being all-inclusive and just, like, respecting everybody. And that's what I love. Like, that's one of the reasons why the movies are so good, is that Chris Evans really embodies that, like, really, really well. Like,
he is actually fighting Nazis on Twitter right now.
He is!
Chris Evans.
Yeah, he's been going back and forth with, like, actual KKK POS David Duke. So it's like Chris Evans is IRL Captain America.
So, I mean, I have no problem admitting my man crushes, but he jumped up a lot of notches when I started seeing that.
Yeah. But yeah, Captain America definitely. Just because, yeah, especially in these... Let's face it, terrifying times. We need a character who is the moral compass of the Marvel Universe.
But see, and here's where the problem is, though, is the storyline going on right now is Captain America is a member of Hydra, which started, you know, with the Nazis and stuff. I really hope it plays out well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good storytelling. It's just, it's really sad that it's happening now.
Yeah. Like, it is.
10 years ago, I would be like, oh, okay, this is an interesting story. But now it's just like, man, this is too real.
Yeah, this is kind of unfortunate times for it.
And I'm not trying to get too political here, and I'm not trying to interrupt you, but as you said, Captain America is supposed to embody America. He's supposed to embody the best of us.
Yeah.
And in the storyline, he's actually a fascist, you know, trying to take over the world kind of guy. And it's so prescient, I guess is the best word I'm looking for, that if he's representing the best of what we can be and he's going for it, that makes me really worried for the country. And I know Nick Spencer, he started writing this way before the election happened.
Right.
But I'm just like, damn it, that's really terrifying to me.
Yeah.
Now, is it just Steve Rogers, or is it any embodiment of Captain America? Because I think Sam Wilson's doing good. I thought Bucky Cap was great.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, is that I really, really enjoyed when Bucky was Captain America. I'm really digging Sam Wilson. I haven't been reading the Sam Wilson series because...
It's been good, man.
It has been, yeah. Like, okay, I'll catch up on it then. Because, like, I read the first few issues, and I really enjoyed Rick Remender's run on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of the things I thought was really cool was how... So it did a really important retcon of the rather unfortunate history of Sam Wilson as Snap Wilson.
Oh yeah,
where he was basically a pimp, and he was kind of a lowlife. But then, yeah. as it turns out, no, that was all just machinations of the Red Skull and the Cosmic Cube. And Sam Wilson was actually a good guy raised by like a Harlem preacher and everything. So he's one of the good guys. But yeah, like
I like Captain America as a title, not of a book, as a. Like general or king or sure. You know, like a title, like that's something, or knight, something that is bestowed upon you. Because I thought the entire Bucky Cap run,
I was fascinated
by that story.
Well, yeah, because that's what's interesting too, is that like it's with Sam Wilson and Bucky as Captain America, they're representing the same ideals, just kind of in a different way.
Yeah, and so the Sam Wilson book, as I mentioned, like I don't know, 45 minutes ago. was and still is this great book about hitting social issues. Like
right.
The first, it's also the only comic book to ever piss off Fox News, which
nice.
I thought was very happy about.
Well,
this.
What was funny about that is that it basically made Fox News
defend the racist ass, you know, jerk faces. I almost went too far.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Of the Serpent Society,
it was like the Sons of the Serpent or
Sons of the Serpent, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, they're actually defending those guys because they quote unquote want to defend their homeland. No, that's not what it really is. They were actually just huge racists.
Yeah, they're flagrant racists.
The Bucky Cap series I thought was really good because it was dealing with the overall arc of the whole thing. Yeah, there were some really cool things was dealing with the mistakes of your past.
Yeah.
Whether it's your fault or not, you still have to own up to them, which I'm a firm believer of, you know, even if it's not 100% of your fault, it still happened and you have to deal with good and bad consequences.
Sure.
And, of course, Steve Rogers. I really hope they get this whole secret empire thing done right.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if there's a Jesus in the Marvel Universe, it's Steve Rogers.
Yeah, yeah. He is like I said. Steve Rogers is the moral compass of the Marvel universe, and that's one of the things that I really loved about the movies, was how well Chris Evans embodied that. Where he's like he sticks up.
He's a genuinely good guy.
Yeah, he is a good guy. He sticks up for the little guy. He never stops fighting. Like I remember there's that part early in the first Avenger, where he's like oh yeah I got beat up in that alley got beat up there. And Agent Carter's like, well, why don't you run? He goes, if you keep running, they're never going to stop. And you have to stick up for yourself and stick up for the little guy. Which
yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, I might have to go watch the Captain America movies when I get home.
That's so great.
okay, so we got Cap down, which nobody has ever said.
Yeah.
And you have a great reason for it. So what's your next one?
The next one is going to be Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel, like not Marvel, but Carol Danvers.
Yeah, yeah, Carol Danvers. Like I said, as I mentioned earlier, since I've been in the comics, I've been a really big fan of hers. Just because like she's this like badass hotshot fighter pilot. I think that's really cool. And then she's also flawed. She's a very human character. Like,
right.
That was one of the things that came out of Civil War too. Is that like she's sticking up for her ideals. Regardless of what everybody else thinks, she believes this is absolutely right, so she's going to go through with it.
So, one thing that I thought was good out of Civil War II was Tony Stark was Carol Danvers. Carol Danvers is a sponsor through AA.
Yeah,
and they both decide to go to an AA meeting to try and avoid each other, and they run into each other again.
Right.
And they have this really great conversation between each other. And it's not really fighting. It's just like, hey, this is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm thinking. I guess I'll have to see you on the battlefield for that later.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very well-written piece.
Yeah.
So continue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's incredibly strong, incredibly independent. She sticks up for her ideals. And yeah, I'm a really big fan of like well-written, strong female characters, and she is like very much the embodiment of that.
Right on. Okay, so that's two. You got three more.
All right. So yeah. So Captain Marvel, Captain America.
There's a theme,
yeah,
I guess.
Captains. I think I'm gonna have to go with Bloodshot.
All right.
So Bloodshot. So as I mentioned earlier, what's cool about Bloodshot is that like he's this nanite powered super soldier, but he's been brainwashed and has had all kinds of false memories implanted to be controlled by this evil paramilitary corporation. So he doesn't know who he actually is. When it starts off for every mission, they just implant him with false memories.
Okay, so pause really quick.
Yeah.
So when I was reading the Bloodshot series, bear in mind it was like 3 years ago for the original one I first read it, and I've been, you know, keeping up the entire time, but I might have missed something. So is he actually Ray Garrison, or is that the just last alias that he had and he just decided to stick with it?
That gets addressed in Bloodshot Reborn, because when at the very very beginning in the first issue of the original Bloodshot, like he knows himself to be Ray Garrison, but that's just a false memory that he's implanted. So at one point, I think it's either at the very end of Bloodshot or at the beginning of Bloodshot Reborn, he actually has like the file with all of his his actual identity and everything.
I remember this.
Yeah, but then he just has it destroyed because he decides that he wants to be
his own person.
Yeah, his own person.
Okay,
he wants to be. So Ray Garrison was like the last name he knew.
Okay, cool. So
that's how he identifies himself.
So unpause, continue.
Yeah, but yeah, I really like Bloodshot just because it's one of those things where he's like desperately seeking redemption and trying to like be his own person after being under control and doing these horrible things for so long. Because as Bloodshot under the control of Rising Spirit, he like did all these like brutal Black Ops missions where he was like assassinating people and like just killing people right and left.
Yeah.
And like for no reason other than like to make Rising Spirit more and more rich.
Okay. So that's three.
Yeah.
Number four.
Okay. I'm gonna have to go with the old standby Spider-Man.
Okay.
Spider-Man's great because Spider-Man, especially when it started out and like whenever
like 1964 starting out, or
yeah like 64 starting out, and that's kind of one of like the key things of the character is that like he's supposed to be the everyman. Like he's like Peter Parker is like he's the put upon nerd. Like he's always picked on by all the bullies, and it's basically wish fulfillment. He's constantly bullied and everything, but then he gets these spider powers and like he puts on this mask and he becomes this like big superhero. And like one of the big key things with Spider-Man is when he's at the mask, he's very talky and very quippy,
right?
As opposed to when he's Peter Parker, where he kind of keeps to himself and he's kind of reserved,
turtle in his shell.
Yeah. Yeah, and so when he's Spider-Man, he can like be his real self and like really help people out as opposed to being just this bullied nerd.
So my problem with the Spider-Man book, the Amazing Spider-Man book that's going on right now, is basically he's Tony Stark.
Yeah, no, there is definitely an element of that where he's super rich. He has this like global corporation, but they actually do address that where it's like oh, you're just a you know, bargain store Tony Stark, but he's still Peter Parker. Like he still like has the infamous Parker luck where he like screws up.
It's just for me, Spider-Man, the entire point of him was he was a loser, and putting on the mask and putting on the suit was the escapism from not being a loser anymore.
Right.
And that's why I like the Miles Morales just Spider-Man book right now, because he's this kid who's trying to... He enjoys being himself now, but he enjoys being himself better that he's Spider-Man. Like, it's, as you said, wish fulfillment and, you know, escapism. But, like, when I see freaking Peter Parker in charge of a multi-billion-dollar corporation, yeah, having a Spider-Mobile again, all this other stuff, it takes away from it for me. I mean, Peter Parker's a loser.
Yeah.
And he's not that anymore. It's like making Hercules not strong anymore.
Yeah.
The best quality of the character for Peter Parker for me was he was humbled.
Yeah.
And now he's not.
Yeah, and that is,
no matter what anybody writes, and as long as he's in this position, I didn't mean to interrupt you, I'm sorry. As long as he's in this position of being the head of a multi-billion dollar corporation, he's no longer humbled. Peter Parker used to take pictures of himself to sell to the Daily Bugle so he could pay his rent.
Yeah.
And now he is not having to deal with that kind of stuff anymore. It's just like, oh yeah, I'm fine, whatever. I'm gonna go to around the world, whatever, fine.
Well, by the same token though, like there was, like I said, there's the whole like Parker Luck thing that's still in effect. Like there was the big event that just wrapped up was Spider-Man the Clone Conspiracy.
Oh, is that over now?
Yeah. I think the last issue just came out this past week.
I haven't had a chance to read anything this week. I've been busy, guys. I'm sorry.
But the last couple issues before that, so one of the big things is that May Parker is actually married to J. Jameson, which is J. Jonah Jameson's father, and so he has this this chronic illness, and so there's this new like biotech corporation that's popped up called New You, which may or may not be related to the Jackal and the clone conspiracy,
right?
And so Peter's really suspicious of this because it sets off his spider senses. And so they're so Jonah is thinking this is best for his father. Peter advises against it, and so as a result of it, J. Jameson actually dies.
There's been a lot of beers, guys. I'm sorry.
So J. Jameson dies, and it's basically Peter's fault. Like he feels horrible and just like feels absolutely guilty about it.
Okay, see, I haven't read that yet. So. Yeah.
So that's kind
and spoilers alert for everybody.
Yeah.
Post haste.
Yeah. I mean this. I think the issue came out in like October, November. So.
Never mind.
Yeah.
Spoilers only for me.
But yeah,
I liked that character, J. Jameson.
Yeah,
I thought he was really cool.
Yeah, and it was kind of a nice contrast for Jonah, because Jonah, as we all know, is like super super high strung and give me pictures of Spider-Man.
Wasn't it funny to you when Peter walks in on Jay and May in bed?
Oh,
like,
God.
I laughed my butt off when I read that. I was like, oh, everybody's done that. That's hilarious. Spider-Man is really the everyman.
Yeah. But yeah, so he is kind of like a bargain store Tony Stark in some regards, but he still has like that a certain Parker luck, Parker charm.
You know, I'm sorry to just keep continuing on this. I mean, we'll move on in just a minute, but I understand that Spider-Man needs bad luck to make the character work.
Yeah.
The Parker luck. I totally get that. And even though this contradicts everything I was saying earlier about him being the new Tony Stark, I loved it when he would win, you know, have like just a small win.
Yeah.
Not like an amazing win, but just like, oh, he eventually got the girl with Mary Jane Watson.
Yeah.
But then that was retconned in the one of the most horrible storylines ever.
I still
say the art was great in it. I mean, Joe Quesada's art,
when he's really
going for it, it's really good.
Well, didn't One More Day also make a James Straczynski quit? Like I think he like
J. Michael Straczynski probably did quit over that.
I remember reading about that, how there was like he was having like major creative issues with him and Joe Quesada and like the Marvel editorial staff, and so I think he was credited for like plot, but he didn't actually write the last issue or two of One More Day.
Okay, so anyways, we delved too far into Spider-Man. So let's go into, you got three now, you got two more left.
Okay, all right, so we got Captain America, Captain Marvel, Bloodshot, Spider-Man.
Oh, no, we only have one left, I'm sorry.
Let's think about that.
See, and this is something interesting, Patrick. We never talked about favorite characters, I don't think, before in this podcast series. So, like, now you're making me think about it as well.
Yeah. Let's see.
Well, while he's thinking, I'm going to go through mine really quick. Madarox the Multiple Man. I think Peter David's run with that book was nothing short of genius. Colossus, just because I'm still a 7-year-old sometimes. Miracle Man by Alan Moore. I really dug that book, and I dug the character, all about self-sacrifice, and also I'm going to change the world whether people like it or not. Moon Knight, and because he's crazy. And Netflix, once again, make a Moon Knight series.
Yes, please.
Please. I, it's not like I'm asking for the world here. Just give me a Moon Knight series. And then I'm going to have to say Robot Man from the Doom Patrol. He's the only character that's been consistent throughout the entire run of Doom Patrol, starting from the very beginning back in the 60s to now. Because, once again, he's an everyman that is just stuck in this situation. He has a robot body and he can do all this stuff, but he calls people crumb bums. And when I was reading Grant Morrison, I was rereading Grant Morrison's run recently, and all this crazy stuff is happening around him. It's just like, guys, seriously, is this happening now? Are we stuck in a snow globe where there's this anti-religion that is happening around all of us? Like, can we just punch our way out of this and get done? That's how I feel a lot of the times of my day. It's just like, seriously, can we just, like, get done with this? Okay, cool. So those are my top five right now. I mean, they always change because there's other things that are happening, but... So you got one more, Patrick. What's it going
to
be?
Okay, so I thought about it, and I'm going to have to go with Faith from Valiant. So I really love Faith.
Faith is an awesome character.
Yeah, so it's kind of what I was getting at before with Ms. Marvel, where Faith, she's a fangirl who becomes a superhero. And so, because she was raised like reading comic books, and part of her tragic origin story was that she and her parents were on the way back from Comic-Con, and they're in a car wreck, and her parents die.
Yeah.
And so, but she still had, like, her parents' collection of comic books, so she has this very, very strong moral compass.
So, one of the best issues that I've ever read this year, probably last year, too, is when her and Archer go on a date.
Yeah.
A, because whenever any date is happening in any form of medium, like movies... comics, books, TV shows, the two people are almost analogous to each other, you know? But Archer is this very slender, you know, very muscular guy who's never dated anybody before.
Yeah.
Although he had a weird thing with his adopted sister, if I remember it correctly.
Yeah, that's right.
and Faith is... She's overweight.
Yeah.
But still beautiful, and they have this amazing date. And the thing with Archer is, in any comic book, whenever he does something, they have this little caption that is describing what he's doing, like parkour or archery or, you know, jujitsu. Yeah. It'll be like, jujitsu, the art of blah, 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 blah. And when they kiss, it says kissing, the art of showing affection. And I was like, that's amazing, the way that they just flipped his whole power set to not just include offensive things or defensive things. It's more just everyday life for him.
Yeah.
And that issue, like, really struck a chord with me. Like, yeah, not every couple weighs the same or looks the same. I mean, yeah, one of them could be heavier than the other, or one of them could be, you know... not enjoying the same things, but they're still a couple. I mean, my wife, she's really into medical science. Lord knows she tells me about it all the time, and I have no idea what she's talking about, but I'm smiling and saying, yes, ma'am, that sounds fascinating.
Yeah, you know, being a doctor and all.
But even if we don't share every single same thing together, we're still a functioning couple that works out well, and that's what Faith and Archer pulled off for me. You know, it's just like, that's you don't have to like all or be the same in every single aspect. You have to just have that one connection.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I went on a really romantic kick here.
No, that is it. That is,
but that's something that really resonated with me.
Yeah, for sure. And that's one of the things that's been like kind of a core to the character, especially recently, is the romantic relationship between Faith and Archer, where he's very straight-laced, and like he's has this like very, very, very sheltered upbringing, and she's just like gleefully into all these things, and like goes into wholeheartedly because she's this fangirl, like she loves she has these things she loves, and she loves them. And like one of the things that I really love about this series is how she'll reference things. Like she'll reference like Battlestar Galactica, and I think it was in the first issue of her solo miniseries. She makes a Red Dwarf reference, which I mean,
hey, I love me some Red Dwarf.
Yeah, I've loved Red Dwarf since I was a kid. So like there's a part where she calls a bunch of dummies.
PBS?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she calls a bunch of dog-napping goons smegheads. I had to set the issue down because I was like, that's amazing. I love this.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's so just like just so positive and so fun. And then it's kind of like with Captain America, where she's just very much kind of the moral compass, where she's just like bright, positive center of everything.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
So, man, we went through all the topics. Well, what else do you want to talk about, Patrick? Let's see where we're at right here. Minute-wise, we're at about an hour and a half in about 6 seconds.
Comics are awesome, everybody. Just
comics are awesome.
Just in case you didn't know, I love comics.
Oh, well, and I do too, and this is like the new literature, in my opinion. I mean, there's great writers happening, there's great artists happening, and it's not only literature, it's an art form, like,
yeah.
Emphasis on the art. I mean, I can't even tell you how many comics I look back in the 70s and 80s, and yeah, they were doing great work, but what people are doing now blows me away. I mean, well, I mentioned Tua Lote and Sean Murphy earlier. I'm really glad that people aren't drawing in the Marvel style. They're making it their own way.
Yeah. Yeah, like one of the artists that really stands out to me is a Kenneth Rocafort. Like he's done a lot of work
Kenneth Rocafort's so good.
Yeah, like his stuff on the Ultimates recently. Like I met him at Alamo City Comic Con last year, and I was telling him like
I'm very envious.
Yeah, and one of the things I was telling him that I really enjoyed that he did on the Ultimates was his panel layout, where like it's very like disjointed, but like the way he actually draws the panel outlines, it's like deconstructing. So it has it has this like crazy like cosmic otherworldly feel to it. Which makes sense because it's a crazy otherworldly cosmic book.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I was very blah about his Red Hood and the Outlaws book when he first started it. Just because, like, I'm sorry, Starfire, if you're real in some alternate universe, I'm sorry people draw you this way. I mean, I've been with my wife for about 15 years, and I know that the anatomy doesn't work that way. Like, nothing supports that much weight. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
But the way he draws the Ultimates book, he really gets psychedelic with it.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I really love.
Yeah, and it works, because like I said, like that's kind of one of the things I've really enjoyed about it. Al Ewing's writing as a whole is how just like weird and like out there he gets.
Weird. God damn it.
And like the Ultimates is very much an example of that, because like one of the big things is that they basically go outside of reality.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
They get outside of reality and it shatters them.
Yeah.
And I think that's amazing.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Oh yeah, that's also the thing too. Anything by Al Ewing, New Avengers, Captain the Mighty Avengers, Mighty Avengers Ultimate.
Is he doing the USA Avengers?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So US Avengers is it's all kind of like spiritually connected.
Yeah.
And yeah, US Avengers is another part of that where it's just like it's weird and it's goofy, but like it's brilliant.
It is. It's been really good. I kind of want to figure out what the Golden Skull is all about.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, so Patrick, it's been a pleasure. So, now's the time to plug yourself. So, you got a Twitter. What is your Twitter?
So, I'm on Twitter, at PatKing13.
Okay. You also are an amazing artist.
Why, thank you.
So, wow, they really turned the music up in this bar that we're sitting in. I'm going to try and focus the microphone a little bit more. So, where can they find your art?
So you can find my art in several places. My main portfolio is patrickkingart.com.
Okay.
There's that.
I didn't know you had your own website. Good God.
Yeah, so I have that. I also sell prints of my art. If you go to etsy.com/patrickkingart. And then I also have a webcomic I'm working on called Aces and Kings.
Aces and Kings.
Yeah, if you go to acesandkings.tumblr.com. And it's basically, it's like alternate, like a alternate history fighter planes, stuff like that.
I'm fine with that.
So yeah. So yeah, acesandkings.tumblr.com.
You can also pick up his art prints at Austin Books and Comics.
Yes, indeed.
I got to do a plug. So you can follow me at Super Ty Denton 1, the number one, not spelled out. And if you guys never notice it, on Twitter, Patrick is really awesome about announcing new comics to come out the day they come out. He's really great at New Comic Book Day, and he's one of my closest friends. So if you find him, if you ever see him in real life, you should talk to him because he's a genuinely awesome guy.
Oh, thank
Patrick,
you.
Patrick, thank you so much for hanging out with me. I'm hoping that we can have one more beer off of the mic and just decompress after doing this hour and 45-minute show.
Yeah.
But yeah, and tell him congratulations. He proposed to his girl, and she's really sweet.
Thank you.
I really hope that he doesn't ask me to be a best man or a groomsman, because I'm kind of tired of doing that. Patrick, I'm not going to lie. I've been the best man at 7 weddings.
Oh, dang.
I've been a groomsman at 13 weddings.
Wow.
Can I just eat your food and drink your booze?
Yeah, I think that works.
Okay, cool. I'm totally fine with it. If you need me to make a speech, I will do it. I'm actually told that I'm pretty good at it, but I have to get drunk first. So, but guys, thank you very much for joining with Taiwan On. If you have any questions, just shoot one to @SuperTaiDenton1, or if you have a question for Patrick, @PatKing13.
Yes, indeed.
All right, thank you guys so much, and we are going to catch you the next time we see you. I appreciate it.